broadcasting live from the PHX.FM studio in Phoenix, Arizona. It's time for Valley Business Radio, spotlighting the Valley's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello and welcome to Valley Business Radio, where we tell the stories that traditional media tends to ignore and help connect you to the right people. I'm your host, Dr. Adrian McIntyre. I'm joined in the studio today by Eric Olson, founder with Fast Turtle, and Amanda Sett, creative director from Fast Turtle. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you, Dr. McIntyre.
Thanks for being here. I am very excited for this conversation. We were chatting out in the lobby before we turned the microphones on, geeking out a little bit. But digital marketing and digital presence has become an indispensable part of the way we live and the way we conduct our business in the 21st century. It's something that everyone from a solopreneur through to a C-suite executive needs to be aware of, needs to a certain degree be knowledgeable about. And you are experts in this field. So we're going to talk about the art and the science of digital marketing. We're going to talk about the mix of math and magic that it takes to really pull off a vibrant web and app presence and all of those things. And Eric, why don't you give us a little introduction to Fast Turtle, who you are, what you do, and who you serve?
Sure. Thank you very much. So, Fast Turtle Digital, we've been around 19 years. It's incredible it's been that long. And what we do, we're a full-service digital marketing company. So we really do website design development for small business owners. We've worked with large companies as well, as big as Disney and ESPN Radio, Honeywell. But our I would say the majority of our clientele is going to be the small business owner, your average law office, doctor's office, and so on and so forth, restaurants, medical. And then it all starts with a really good website, but you need the marketing to go with it. So we're a Google partner with Facebook as well. So we're doing social media, posting management, as well as the advertising. That's a huge part right now, especially with Facebook, LinkedIn, if you're B2B. Email marketing. We're a premier partner with Constant Contact, have been for years. We actually do seminars and speak on their behalf here on the West Coast. What else am I forgetting, Amanda? We got social media, email, paid. I think that's pretty much it.
And the website platform.
And the website platforms.
Yes.
Yeah.
So.
Yes.
Now, Amanda, what's your role as creative director? This puts you straddling those two worlds I mentioned, the math and the magic. You're working both sides of it. What's your role and what are you dealing with?
It definitely is. A lot of it is working with clients on the creative side, helping them develop their messaging, letting their brand voice shine through. And then the other side of it is some of more of that technical, giving them advice. You know, here's what you need to do for this type of thing or what type of, you know, platform or tool is going to help their needs the best. So it is a little bit of both, which is why I love it.
Yeah, for sure. Now, 19 years ago, I'm remembering everyone had a Yahoo or Hotmail address. Those of us connected to universities had email for maybe 7 or 8 years, but a lot of folks were still getting America Online CDs mailed to them to give them access to the internet. And you got the idea to start something in this realm. Take us back. What's the origin of this company?
Well, I won't go too far, but worked for a large organization called America Online. Prior to that, we worked and did affiliate marketing, the banner advertising. So I worked with cable and wireless, kind of UK company like AT&T, and we sold banner advertising. We were acquired by America Online in the mid-90s, late-90s, and did that. And a great experience, worked for a big company, not a huge fan of bureaucracy, and so one reason why I started my own company. And then left that company, actually worked for a .com, saw that ride as far as going up and down with the funded .coms. And then the company that I worked for prior to starting Fast Turtle was a company called VisionStream here in Scottsdale. And they had four clients. The two clients I worked with was Computer Associates and State Farm.
Now, Computer Associates was a huge player back then. I don't think I've heard that name.
I'm dating myself now.
Well, no, I mean, I should say,
it's
so
true.
Part of the context for this is I nerd out with you about all of this stuff is because I grew up in my dad's radio station, and starting in the 70s, he was an early adopter of automation, which was not done by PCs because they didn't exist, mm-hmm. but was actually mechanical automation, cart machines, clocks, things of that nature. As we evolved, we just by virtue of our privilege and our position, benefited really early as a family from this stuff. So 1981, when the first IBM PC rolls off into the consumer market, we have one at home, and it kind of goes from there. So, but I'm, remembering as you're talking, I'm like, this is bringing back childhood memories in a way.
There's some big companies there.
You're not older than me, but I don't think, which is interesting. But in any case, so you were working with, and you had these clients.
Yeah. So those two companies, I was managing the website design team and development team, and we were developing landing pages. Pages as they were still going out to trade shows. I don't know if you recall the little diskettes they used to hand out at trade shows.
My friend, I recall 8-inch floppies.
Then
5 1/4 and then 3.5. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So floppy disks were actually that little icon when you go to save something is a picture of an actual object that we used to use.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which nobody uses anymore.
Kids don't know what a dial tone is. Nothing. Anyway, you carry on.
Long story short.
This is not just going to be two old guys being nostalgic. I promise.
Kibitzing over this. That's funny. Computer Associates actually ended up acquiring this company because we handled all their website design and development. And at that time, I realized this is great for big business. But at the same time, you could be working out of your apartment. And if you have a really good website and the marketing that goes with it, and back then SEO was just beginning. So Google was just ramping up. You could look like a $1 million company. Like this is the coolest thing. So in 2000, I'm 25 years old. So now you can figure out that, I decide, hey, this is what I want to do. I go home one day, the company just got acquired. Everyone's getting offered to move to LA. I don't want to move to LA and told my wife, all right, I'm starting my own company and let's go. And I recall, and I tell the story a lot to our sales staff as well, is I used to walk up and down Scottsdale to the strip malls and be like, all right, I don't know what you're doing now for your marketing, or website, but we can meet it or beat it, give us a shot. And that's how we started Fast Troll, and now we've got thousands of clients.
It's the sneaker net equivalent of what America Online was doing with CDs. You were literally going door to door to sell websites.
Yeah, yeah.
This is fascinating to me. And this was just not that long ago. I mean, maybe this is now like old man memory talking. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm 46. I'm not that old. Yeah. I feel like I'm in my 20s. But we don't realize how everything we take for granted didn't exist even 15 years ago.
Yeah.
There was no iPhone. There was no, any of these things. Now, Amanda, what's your personal journey into the world of technology? How did you develop this interest and how did you find your way into the role you have today?
Yeah, I've worked with Fast Troll now about 10 years, actually, too. So even in that short time, seeing where things have come from and where they're going, the future is just crazy. But for me, my first love always started with design, the creative aspect, and kind of just transformed naturally into more of that technological side as we're seeing, hey, we could really help people with this, or this is actually kind of fun and kind of cool to learn this stuff and to try these new technologies, and we can do it in a way that is creative and still fun. That's where it kind of just blossomed naturally into the website side of things.
When you first started with computerized design, what platform were you working on? What was the tools? What was the software? Do you remember?
Oh man, my
not that long ago. Come on,
no, but
we're
I did.
The old
yeah,
guys
I remember my first copy of Photoshop. I think I was probably maybe 15. A friend of mine gave it to me, and from then on, it was it was his history. It was awesome, and I think we had a compact computer, one of those really, really heavy ones. And yeah.
With a handle.
Yeah, pretty much. And that was I spent all my free time doing. Yeah, it was my favorite hobby. And, luckily, grateful to be able to do that now as part of my job.
Now, not everybody successfully makes the transition that you seem to have done from the creative side of it into the technology, the the development, not just the design, but also the kind of strategy and business-minded approach that I know Fast Turtle takes that we're going to hear more about. When did you realize that your skill set was a blend of those things?
I think that's really the great part of working at Fast Turtle is we're very small in that sense of we're able to really pivot and work quickly on our feet where we can, you know, work with clients on what they need and kind of evolve with those rapidly changing technologies. And it kind of came about, yeah, from that of just, hey, we kind of want to do this and we can do it. And so let's do it.
Now let's get into the disciplines that are involved here a little bit, because we were talking outside about how interesting it is that there's something of a paradox in that there has never been more tools that are either free or very low cost that are available to anybody who wants to build websites, make pictures, produce audio or video. Like the democratization and the lowering of the cost of entry has been phenomenal. I mean, what it used to cost to build a website in 2000 for those funded .coms.
Yeah.
Which the funding all went away 9 months later, but and the stock price. I remember going to Burning Man with some kids who were like 27-year-old, like ridiculously wealthy people. But it was the summer of 2000, and the very next year they were all working at banks.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I digress. The democratization of these tools means almost anybody can go online now and build something. They can find, they can make a website, they can start up social media accounts, they can begin to create their own online presence. And yet at the same time, the paradox is it's never been easier or there's never been more access to those tools. And yet the amount of information overload, the challenge of making something that drives business results has never been harder because there's never been more noise. Talk about that a little bit, Eric, and what you're seeing.
Yeah, and that's completely true. And I was actually, because you use the word noise, and I'm thinking that's what we talk about all the time. And it is because it's so easy. Shoot, you've got an iPhone, you can do a video really quick and then push that out to Facebook, YouTube, whatever platform you want to get your voice out, which is awesome. But there's a huge difference between getting your voice out, creating noise, and driving business with that. So that's where it really gets back to strategy and then knowing your audience. That's a big thing with, especially in small businesses, when we talk to them of if you're business to consumer, who is your audience? Where are they playing? Are they playing on Facebook? Are they playing on Instagram? You know, are they on LinkedIn to some degree? And then, you know, time is one of the things that we just don't have unlimited supply of. So you really need to understand where you need to be playing to get the return on investment for the amount of time you're spending. It's not always about the dollars, but it talks about the time, because it takes time to, you know, do podcasts, videos, just even social media posts, and doing, you know, a quality social media post on a daily basis that's going to drive people back to your website, one, and then that will get them to do a call to action, which is either pick up the phone, give you their email to download a white paper or fill out a form so you can reach out and then continue that sales cycle. It's huge. And if you think that just by posting stuff that's what's going to just create revenue for you, that's a difficult thing.
Let's start with the website itself, which is for most businesses the appropriately the pillar of the foundation anyway of everything. It's an owned property rather than a rented one, which the social profiles are. And you could invest a lot of time or a lot of money or both to build essentially a billboard that is 27 miles off the interstate in the middle of the desert.
Yeah.
So, but before we get to the traffic part, which I know is critical because you can make anything, but if nobody sees it, did it happen?
Yeah.
well, it happened, but was it a wise investment?
Exactly,
no.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some fundamentals here. So, you know, realtors, restaurant owners, doctors or law practices, small businesses, or even e-commerce stores, the foundation has to be a website. Can you talk to us about in late 2019 some of the core must-haves for a small business website?
Sure. Do you want, you can feel that.
There is so much. I think one of the things that I notice a lot when we talk with our clients is a business owner, they tend to have lots of different ideas, lots of different kind of channels coming in. And sometimes it can be hard to refine their voice and their message and really get down to the nitty gritty of what they're trying to sell or who their customer is. So part of what we do is helping with that and really helping them get that focus and building up that foundation around it. Like one of the things we say a lot is your website is your 24/7 salesperson. So it needs to be doing those effective things, you know, like Eric mentioned, getting people's information, giving them something of value, not getting in their way, not overwhelming them with too much information, giving people what they need and when they need it, not all at once, but, you know, kind of maybe parceling it out a little bit, things like that. Because obviously with that sort of increase of the DIY and everything out there, there's noise on that side too, where you're, you know, as a business owner, your customer, they're looking at five other businesses doing the same thing as you. So how do you cut through that? That's part of what we try to really get our clients to help and hone in on.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think about putting myself in the shoes. I mean, I am a small business owner. I also talk to a lot of them. And I just see, if I take myself as kind of a sample of N equals one, and I look at the YouTube pre-roll ads that show up when I go to watch something with my kids, and you know it's from a platform like Wix or someone else's. You need a website? I just designed one. Let me show you what I did. Bah, bah, bah. It was like 5 minutes. And by the way, those platforms are valuable. There's a lot of them that have gotten really good. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not what it used to be.
Yeah.
The Wixes, the Squarespaces, the Weeblies, the whatevers.
Mm-hmm.
And yet there's still a fact of someone has to do it. Somebody has to do the work. And so while I applaud the fact that those tools are available, the reality is that the people who build the DIY sites are actually better suited doing other things, probably. I mean, their core skill set. If you really think about what it takes to put together a website, I used to tell people when I did more freelance work in the past, if you want a new website, the first thing you should think about is getting some really, really great photographs, because the visuals of your site are going to come more from the pictures than from the containers that you put those pictures in, or the little overlays, the backdrops, the subtle touches, the gradients. So the first investment you probably didn't realize you need to make is a really good photographer.
Mm-hmm.
And a photographer who understands how to visually communicate who you are, what you do, the value, et cetera. And stock photos are a terrible, terrible idea for a business, right?
I would agree with that. And unfortunately, to the other side is a lot of small businesses can't afford a photographer. So they're going to have to go with the stock photos. But even to that point, are you choosing images of people? Are you choosing images of buildings? Are you choosing images of landscapes? Do you know what's right for your customer, for your business? I know what you personally might like as a small business owner, but you're not selling to you, you're selling to other people. So that's where we get into it. But you know, to your point, you definitely, if you can invest in it, use your own images. You know, even if it's images with, you know, a latest, I guess, iPhone or something like that. But as long as the lighting's correct and you're able to do some things in that respect, I think that's going to really help show the personality of the website and the personality of the company when you get right down to it. You know, what are your thoughts, Amanda?
Definitely, yeah. Everybody, of course, is very visual. That's going to be the first thing that gets someone's attention, whether it's, colors even, but yeah, visuals especially draw people in. I think we hear a lot about people, do they read, do they not read? I think there's arguments, obviously, on both sides. I think we do see people read if it's useful is kind of the shortcut that, mm-hmm. that we've seen. So well, we try to help keep it useful.
The answer to all those things is yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Some people read.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. some people don't. Some people watch long videos. Mm-hmm. Some people watch 6-second videos. Mm-hmm. So you need to have something. I mean, in a perfect world with unlimited time and budget, you would have something for everyone.
Yeah.
But for most people, we don't live in that world. We live in the world of limited time and limited mm-hmm. budget. And so we need to pick and choose. That's another reason why having strategists like yourselves to guide them through makes a lot of sense. All right. Now that we've got a website, let's just say, you know, whether they've designed it themselves or you've done it for them, now people need to find it.
Mm-hmm.
People need to, and this gets into this mystical realm called traffic.
Yeah.
You said, again, for every one of these topics, I'm smiling because there are people out there selling really expensive repackaged knowledge that's actually freely available through a Google search. But in any case, traffic is this mystical thing that everybody thinks that they want. How does a website get found in 2019?
Well, I'll take that one. But to your point, as far as the mystical side of people that saying, "Hey, years of experience is how we can do that." On the flip side, we also have people that are graduating high school that are starting companies and saying, "I'm a digital expert because I've got 1,000 followers on Facebook, and you should trust me."
Right.
And
by the way, the kids that are graduating high school don't have 1,000 followers on Facebook, Eric.
Oh,
they're
Instagram.
Not even on Instagram. We'll get to TikTok later, but
yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah. But you're right. Anyone can. This is the challenge of the freelance industry.
Yes.
Quality control. You don't know what you're going to get. Listen, I've been a freelancer who's had some really happy clients and some really unhappy clients.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, to a large part, it was an expectation gap.
Yeah.
People really think on the client side first. I mean, I'll take responsibility for my side. But on the client side, the biggest problem is we now live in a world where other people's sales messages are setting the expectations of clients who come in the door to professional services firms, to web services, to digital shops, to whatever, because they may have gotten the idea somewhere that a small investment will make the internet start printing money.
Correct. Correct. Right? And I'll circle back. So when we get back to the traffic portion, back in 2000, even all the way up to 2010, I would sit here and say, SEO, be number one, be the top three on Google. It's really going to drive your brand. And that's you can get away with just doing that. Now, I would say over the last 3-4 years, we've talked about an omni-channel approach. You have to be doing some search engine optimization, some paid media, whether that's Google Ads or Facebook advertising or even LinkedIn now, which is up and coming for 2020 and beyond. It's where everyone should be looking at integrating some money or putting some budget towards that in the future. That and with social media posts, you don't know. So it used to go from 3 to 5 touches that you had to get in front of a client before they would reach out and potentially purchase from you or at least give you information. Now it's up to 7 to 9 touches. So I need to get an email from you. I need to see your brand on social. I need to see your brand when I search on Google. So those are the things that, because of the noise, because it's so easy to just put information out there, now before I hand over $1 to work with you, I need to make sure that you're, one, a consistent company, but two, I see you in multiple places and I feel secure in your brand now to take to that next step. And that's really where educating businesses is to cover those different bases. Even if it's just a minimal program in each section, it's going to pay out huge in the long run, as long as you have a good strategy of, okay, we need to play in Instagram versus LinkedIn because we're business to consumer and younger generations, and we have a picturesque product or service. Those are the things that you want to identify. So
there's a couple of things I want to tease out here, because I think understanding these fundamentals will make everybody better consumers of digital marketing services. One is, there's a huge difference between the world of branding and the world of transacting, and you need both.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, marketing, awareness, things of that nature, and sales, right? So much of the digital landscape has been driven by people who are selling the sales conversion side of the equation, because that's most what people want.
Yeah.
It's lead generation, it's landing page optimization, it's email marketing, it's sales. But you mentioned it in passing, people need to see your brand.
Mm-hmm.
And that means content.
Correct.
And content marketing is somewhat of a troubled stepchild of this world, because it's trying to mix two things. What are your thoughts on the role of, well, for content marketing, it used to mean ebooks and white papers. And, you know, if for digital products, maybe a three-part video series that led to a sales video. In any case, some kind of valuable information that presumably you get in exchange for an email address or something. And we've seen a good 10 years of this. Is it still viable? Is it kind of played out? What are your thoughts on this current state of content marketing as a strategy?
I mean, there's a lot out there, that is for sure. There is definitely information overload. I think we have seen that too, even in our industry too, agencies, marketers, and things like that. But I think it could be, I definitely think it can be effective too. It kind of goes back to my thing is like, you know, making sure that it's useful information, not just spammy or like you said, you know, easily findable. If there's something unique about it or special or, you know, some of that strategy, some of the expertise that is useful. I think it can be useful. It's probably harder to get people's attention though than it used to be.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I do believe it's useful. Again, I'm a huge believer, you know, doing this for a long time. Content is king as far as increasing rankability for your site. You know, we talked earlier about even backlinks. I think it goes to quality, again, to Amanda's point, you being the expert in the room in making sure that the content doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, a 10-page doc or Shakespeare here. It definitely needs to be something with value. 10 bullet points, 20 bullet points, this is what you need to do, why you need to do it, kind of the who, what, where, when, how approach.
I think if we connected all of this to our real world human habits and preferences, we would understand better. If we actually wrapped our heads around the fact that the online world doesn't work all that differently than it does in real life, yeah. IRL, as yeah. the kids apparently say, which is when you meet somebody, you have a first impression. You can't yeah. help it. Sometimes negative, sometimes positive. By the way, nothing wrong with having negative first impressions. That's what helps you make choices about mm-hmm. who to spend more time talking to at the dinner party, or whether you think this person is worth getting to know better and having a follow-up conversation. So we're all making these judgments as we navigate human relationships, and we're doing the same thing online as well. If I go to the website and my very first thing, which just happened to me earlier this morning, I was looking to connect with somebody and I went to their website, which they had linked to from their LinkedIn profile, and it was a parked by GoDaddy kind of a thing. So they bought the domain
yeah.
and there's no website there. Mm-hmm. There's just the parked page that says somebody owns this site, right?
Yeah.
That's my first impression
yeah.
of their company. It's not great. It's not terrible because maybe they just registered it yesterday and I found it too fast.
Yeah.
I have a feeling though it might have been sitting there for a while. Then as we get to know people, we start asking them questions. Some people are obnoxious
mm-hmm.
and all they want to do is sell us stuff, right? It's the insurance salesman that you accidentally end up next to in the buffet line. And you just can't get away fast enough because he's not interested in you. He's only trying to sell you insurance and all you want is to reach past him and get the salad or whatever. I'm taking this metaphor way
good,
too
good
far,
visual.
Way too far. Storyteller. It's a pitfall. But as you start to build a relationship with people, a meaningful human relationship with people, then you start to realize that, you know what, this person might be able to help me.
Mm-hmm.
I might actually be willing now to disclose to them some of the challenges I have because it sounds like they're expert enough to help me address those. If our digital presence isn't thinking through that same kind of sequence, we're making a mistake. Thoughts?
Completely agree. And to your point, what we try to do and educate our customers is the internet's about free information, okay? But it's got to be good information. Just because you can say something doesn't mean you should say something. That's what I tell my kids all the time. Think before you speak. So again, that's where you have to look at and go, okay, what am I providing to my potential clients, to the audience that's out there, you know, general public? And is it of value? To your point, if you're going to sit there at a cocktail party, do you want to sit next to this person who's just selling themselves and this is what I can do for you the whole time versus just having an open conversation of, hey, this is what I just saw yesterday and I thought it was really interesting, whether it's, you know, economic growth here in Phoenix, you know, there's a myriad of topics, even sports, things of that nature. But in everyone's an authority in their area. And to be able to offer that information out there. I know, you know, on our postings, we're always talking about tips and tricks and all these things that you can do yourself. Now, it's your choice if you're a doctor, lawyer, restaurateur to go, yeah, I'm going to spend my nights and weekends, you know, doing social media versus, hey, I want to do my job and enjoy what, you know, what my profession is. But there's a lot of information out there where you can do that. And as, you know, as Fast Turtle, we want to go ahead and be able to promote those, you know, that useful information for our clients. And it's the same thing we tell our clients to be able to do is, hey, you should be, you know, we have a lot of doctor's offices. Tell us when flu season's hitting. Tell us what we should be eating to help, you know, so we don't get the flu, you know. And so those are the, you know, that's the information that people want.
Yeah. And there's something I think is, if you wouldn't, when you meet somebody, you start the conversation with them. If you wouldn't withhold information until they give you your email address,
yeah,
don't do that online either.
Yeah,
exactly. If you've got some interesting information about the flu season, publish it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, instead of like, oh, you want to know about that? No problem. Just give me your email and I'll send you my white paper.
Mm-hmm.
But I digress. There's another, my brain is spinning here because there are so many unique opportunities that are coming together now. These things tend to come in waves, but I want to talk about, I'll just mention them and you can help me remember to get us around to them in the conversation. I want to talk about the relocalization of business and the way that plays out in local SEO.
Mm-hmm.
And also that maybe your market, as you said earlier, Eric, is not the internet. It is very specific. You have to know where they are. And sometimes that where is geography,
yeah,
right? So there's that. I want to talk about the way we search now, which is increasingly using voice,
yep,
and what it means to do a voice SEO type strategy. And then I'm very interested to understand some of the things that you're seeing playing out in terms of trends, things of that nature. But let's start with local. Local SEO, people may have heard of this. They may or may not be aware of it. What's involved and what's different about local SEO versus the general category of search engine optimization?
Sure. Big parts, you know, two things that you really want to look at is your directories and, you know, specifically Google My Business listing. And then there's a number of directories after that, even if you look at the main searches, you know, Bing, Yahoo, and so on. But there's, you know, YP.net, the companies like that. So you want to make sure that your directory listings, what's called NAP, name, address, phone, everything's updated there. Those profiles are completely filled out as much as you possibly can. The other, yes.
And one quick thing on that, I'm amazed how many businesses don't realize the consistency in your name, address, phone number in those listings really matters. Your data is being scraped. It's already available through third-party service providers. You may go out there for the very first time ever and realize you already have listings in mm-hmm. 47 directories, and they're not the same.
Absolutely, because you look at it, I could start a directory tomorrow, ericsdirectory.com, and I'm just going to scrape information off probably InfoUSA or Dun & Bradstreet, and then, okay, here's my directory. And now you, as the business owner, have to claim that listing, update the information, because it might be wrong, old address, old phone number, it might have suite spelled out versus STE, you know, all these other things that all play into your rankability on Google, which is the gorilla of where we all want to be anyways. And so, yeah, the small business owner, you know, they have enough to worry about starting their own business and doing these things. This is the last thing they need to worry about, but it's important.
That's the easy one.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one that somebody with 5 extra hours who wants to go through everything could
yeah.
do it. When it starts to get into schema data and micro data, talk about that. That's yeah. super important.
And so that's all the information you need, you know, schema.org, make sure that all your information is up to date there. And then you're posting that information. It needs to be, everything needs to be up to date. And that's where we're talking about the locality and the local SEO and voice. the majority of searches are happening through mobile devices right now. So you really need to be looking at, you know, business near me, pizza near me, you know, a storage facility near me, all of those things. That needs to be identified within the content of the site and schema information to make sure that you're coming up in those general areas. You know, you made a point, and we've got a doctor's practice that has 10 office locations here in town, and they want to make sure that they're not fighting for, you know, pediatrician, let's just, you know, be general, on Google, but they want the people that are in that zip code in a 5-mile radius to make sure that they're talking to influencers in that radius and social media, you know, the moms that are out there. They want to make sure that when people are searching, you know, Google near me, or excuse me, pediatrician near me, that they're coming up in those searches on the local side, not the general Google section. So really identifying local advertising. And then also, you know, an additional area is the Google Ads, making sure that you're coming up and being geocentric on your advertising.
You mentioned Google My Business, and this is certainly an important part of the mix. It gives business owners who claim their listing there get verified, which is a simple process. They mail you a postcard and things. It takes a little bit of time, but it's easy to do. It gives them a dashboard, a kind of a central place to control a fair amount of this stuff. But I'd love to use that as a springboard into something that you have both alluded to earlier, which is just getting your static basic fundamentals in place is the cost of entry. That's step one. But it doesn't stop there, because whether it's Google My Business listing or other forms of content, these things need to be updated. The reviews become a huge important thing. How do you get those reviews? Photos, posts. So everything is dynamic now. Amanda, what are some of the content needs that a business has? If they were to kind of step back and look at some of the big buckets, you know, getting a website in place, getting at least your basic SEO on page and things handled. So that's all, there's no holes in the boat, but you haven't gone anywhere yet. What they need to start thinking about content and strategy and social. And I mean, this, obviously we could spend years digging into this, but what are the big buckets that business owners need to be thinking about when it comes to creating content in an ongoing way?
Yeah, I know for Google, definitely having photos, of course, of your business inside, outside, you know, pictures of employees, things like that for the Google side. But even within a website, and a lot of our clients will have articles where we are doing some of that content marketing, where it's more of a resource kind of library, where whatever their industry might be, pediatrician is a great example, talking about things like flu season and healthy tips and, you know, what to do for back to school, stuff like that. That's really a big part of it. And then, of course, promoting that back on social as well, where you're then linking people back to your website. That's another great way to sort of connect those channels and make sure you are creating that kind of omni-channel experience.
And even social media posts are localized if you use that option. You know, if you add a location on Instagram or Facebook. And I think Google Photos is pulling EXIF data from your actual images. If you upload them from your phone, it's getting latitude and longitude and all this stuff. There's a lot going on in the background.
Yeah.
Having your customers take photos with their phones and post them to your Google My Business listing is a really good idea.
Yes.
We should be doing more of that in here.
Yes.
And that goes to, we should always be doing more of that. And it's just not top of mind, unfortunately, for a small business owner, but it is very important.
Eric, I wanted to ask you a kind of a provocative question, which is, if you were to go back in time, now you can't really do this, but so 2000, you're walking door to door around Scottsdale or somewhere in that ballpark, selling web services door to door. If you were to start Fast Turtle in 2019, right? So you have all the knowledge, you have all the tools, but you don't have the business, and you were going to start it and grow it today, what's the current equivalent of that going around door to door? What would be the first things you would want to tackle if you were going to eat your own cooking and use it to promote Fast Turtle as a small business?
Okay.
Where do you start?
So let me clarify this. So I'm starting Fast Turtle and
tomorrow.
And I want to make sure I pick the right channels to promote my company.
Yes.
For small business.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, right off the bat, I'm doing Google paid. I'm doing LinkedIn advertising. I am finding InfoUSA data of new businesses that are starting or have started over the last quarter. So we've got a telemarketing campaign going there along with a drip email campaign for them. What else am I doing? I'm selecting a niche that I want to work on. One of the biggest things, and I tell our clients as much as possible, yes, anyone can build a website. We can do it for any organization that's out there, any, you know, industry that's out there. And that was kind of our thing. You know, like, again, we've worked with lawyers and I've worked with Disney. Those two totally different groups,
Very different.
By the way. And so in starting the company, I would really focus in on a niche because that's how you can scale pretty quick. But to circle back, the channels are really going to be that email marketing, easy drip campaign once a week, maybe twice a week. They're getting an email, general information, useful information, not, hey, can you buy a website today? It's all about the value of it or the value of local SEO or social, and then just have a remarketing program. So when they go out and they are on, you know, ESPN News or CBS or whatever those sites, they're seeing, you know, one of our ads.
This is the thing that is so different now than in the earlier iterations of AdWords or mm-hmm. other platforms, and that is the ability to use pixels to retarget people that may have seen videos on Facebook, website traffic. I mean, LinkedIn's built in, you know, LinkedIn has a pixel or somebody's yep. visiting your website. You can now use that in the LinkedIn ads product.
Mm-hmm.
So the days of give me your email address before I give you anything have also faded a bit because of our ability now to follow people around the internet. You can get ubiquitous pretty quickly
mm-hmm.
if you're being smart about it.
Yeah, this is why, you know, second half of my life, I want to be a sheep herder somewhere else, because the funny thing is our data is already out there. Like, if people are scared about, you know, social security numbers and credit cards, like, all that's already out there, unfortunately. But at the same time, as a marketer, we can target you. We can, you know, and so if I want Eric Olson and I want to build a lookalike campaign on Facebook because I know Eric Olson likes to travel or golf or eat in certain places, I'm going to be able to target that person and find 20 other Eric Olsons that will probably purchase my stuff.
Yeah.
And that's the cool thing that you know, marketing and digital marketing allows you to do now that it didn't do 20 years ago.
Now, you've got a new platform, new-ish platform, Fast Sites by Fast Turtle, which is for those folks who are just starting or who realize that their current stuff is broken, they want a fresh start, allows them to put together something quite quickly. Can you talk a bit about Fast Sites, rather?
Yes.
Amanda?
Yeah, it's we're calling it kind of the simpler approach to websites is what we've been calling it, because it's, I like to think of it as sort of the best of both worlds, where you can work with us. We have our expertise for what works for your industry. There's templates we know that are going to work. If you're a restaurant, this template performs really well for restaurants. And then we can take that and sort of tailor it, update it with, you know, content, images, and give it to these business owners where they can feel comfortable. They can have videos. They have guides. If they want to manage it themselves, they definitely can. They have that control, that flexibility, but then they also have us as a resource if they need help, or, you know, they have questions or they're not sure what approach is the right approach. So this is a hosted platform where it has a content management system. They can go in and control everything and access everything. And so far we've had a lot of really happy clients come out of it. They like having both options.
You know, I think of some of the best restaurants that I've been fortunate to eat in where they have a prefix menu where this is what the chefs put together tonight. So you know what you're going to pay, and then they're going to give you the best of what they've got. What's the freshest? It's the right combination. It's paired with the right kinds of things. And it's probably more expensive than the In-N-Out burger down the street,
mm-hmm.
but it's been designed thoughtfully by someone who's really leading their field. The ingredients for everything you just mentioned are already out there available.
Sure.
Right? Somebody could buy a web hosting platform, mm-hmm. right? They could get a WordPress installation, maybe a few premium plugins that they might need. They could start to roll their own, mm-hmm. right? And put this all together. They could take their own photos. They could write their own copy. I mean, we didn't even talk about the messaging
yeah.
on a website, but that's, you know, visuals are probably the fastest thing we realize. But when it comes to actually making a connection in a meaningful way, we got to talk about the words.
Mm-hmm.
They could begin to put this all together, and then they start to think, well, now I need people to email me. I guess I need a contact form of some kind. Well, that's going to hook up to something. Maybe it's Constant Contact. Maybe it's ActiveCampaign. Maybe some other CRM. And then, well, how am I going to try? I guess I need to put those pixels in. Like, you could go down the rabbit hole mm-hmm. of do it yourself
yeah.
till the end of time. And you may not get the result you want. Because at the end of the day, the goal is not the website. The goal is the business
mm-hmm.
that comes from the website.
Absolutely.
Right? Again, without wanting to lean too heavily on the scale, all the options are available.
Yeah.
Take the one that works for you. But unless you think you're the best strategist and designer and technologist in the world, maybe you should talk to an expert. Eric, you were sharing a story from your own family about sure. the situation. What was that all about? Sure. Not to throw anybody under the bus here. Yeah, sorry. No.
Yeah, that works. A little disclaimer, sister-in-law. So yeah, one of the things that we always talk about is anyone can build your website. We help build businesses. And so, you know, one of the things that we were sharing earlier is I've got a family member that just started her own consulting company, went to a big national platform, hey, build it yourself, DIY site. It's cheap, it's easy, anyone can do it. And spent a solid 5-6 hours on a Saturday afternoon, struggled to learn the system, how to navigate the system, where the images go, add content. Her and her partner were working on just writing content and then copying and pasting it in. And then at the end of it, went to go hit publish. She hit a different button, couldn't find all the work that she just completed, and just really spent 5 or 6 hours and got nothing out of it. And not just to you know, talk about her situation. I hear that a lot when we talk to our sales staff, that's the biggest frustration with small business owners is, yeah, there's programs out there, DIY programs, Wix, Weebly, you know, so on, that make it look very easy. And our thing is, why don't we just build it? It's $1,000, $995, and give you the keys. But we're the ones with 19 years experience that know what the verbiage should be, what your content should be, where the call to action should be. You should have at least 3 call to actions on your website, on the homepage, you know, a phone number in the top right, how people can get in touch with you. Those templates don't say that. They don't tell you, hey, this is how to build your business. These are the things that need to be there. They'll say, hey, you can add your image here. Or here's a content box. So there's a big discrepancy there. But that's one of the things that we're hearing from, you know, small businesses that are out there, that this isn't, you know, yes, I can do it with some of these DIYs. It's the fear of the unknown. And making sure that you have a strong partner that's out there. But it's a funny thing is she, you know, we sat down because she came to me the next day and she said, hey, I tried to do this. I didn't want to call you, you know, and you know, take advantage or, you know, get a website for free or anything like that. So, but she's sharing that whole experience and she was so frustrated and she goes, everything's made to seem so simple online and, you know, on the commercials. And it really just isn't if that's not what you're used to doing. Now, if you're, you know, very technical savvy, maybe that's something that anyone can jump in and do. And that's why those programs do exist.
You know, I think it was Winston Churchill who said, I wrote you a long letter because I didn't have the time to write a short one. There's something about the fact that to make things look elegant and effortless is a lot of work, takes a very high level of skill. And certainly technology is no different. I mean, thinking back a number of years now to the launch, the bumpy launch of healthcare.gov,
mm-hmm.
probably one of the most complex websites that many people might have had a chance to experience if they don't have employer-provided healthcare. And when they finally got it working, and it worked as a website. It works really well, and it's so simple. But the amount of effort and money and expertise that went into creating this fairly seamless flow of, you know, filling in forms and checking a box and doing this and a nice big green button. And, you know, it looks really simple because it's so complex.
Yes.
Under the hood.
Yeah.
And I think many small business owners will quickly realize they're in over their heads when it comes to this stuff. One of the things that I know you also talk about, you've written about it for the Arizona 100, you've mentioned this a lot, is cybersecurity. So having a website is a benefit, but it can also become a potential vulnerability. What are some of the issues, especially with data protection, email, et cetera, what are some of the issues that you see small business owners need to think more critically about when it comes to cybersecurity?
Yeah, on the website side, we obviously see sites that get hacked, things like that, and things like having an SSL can help on the Google side. But overall, we just try to educate people about those types of situations and doing everything we can to prevent and then, you know, and mitigate as well. With our FastSite platform as a great example, it's because it is a hosted platform. That means we can seamlessly run security updates in the back end. So it's not, you don't have to go in and you know, update. If you've ever had like a WordPress site, somebody has to go in and update those. Usually update plugins, update themes, make sure any security vulnerabilities are patched. So it has to have somebody very actively kind of monitoring it, where our FastSites now, that's sort of rolled in. So we're doing it. You don't see it as the business owner, but it's there, and it's obviously, you know, running along in the background.
You know, I've built a lot of WordPress sites over the years, and at no point in time has there ever been a phone number I could pick up and call somebody at Automatic or whatever to get any kind of support. I think that's another big value add that people are getting with your program. Is that right? That they actually have a human being that they can reach out to when they get into trouble?
Correct. Mm-hmm. That and a knowledge base online. There's different content pieces as well as videos that they can watch to update that. To circle back with the cybersecurity as well, you know, that's one of the things that Google's knocking websites as far as rankability down if they don't have the SSL. Again, Google's a business, and so they want to provide secure, really good rankings as it relates to the subject matter. And that's one of the things that small businesses, they, you know, you don't know what you don't know. And so, you know, hey, you know, cousin Timmy, can you build us a website? Because, you know, WordPress, yes, I do, I can. But they don't know to purchase the SSL to go with it. They don't know to do at least monthly backups as well as updates to WordPress. And WordPress is a great platform. We actually build in WordPress as well. But it's one of those things that if you're not on top of it, your site will eventually get hacked. And people don't understand, like, why? How can this happen? It's the same reason you get a virus on your computer. There's just bad people that are out there and are you know, going to take advantage of that. So,
and there's security professionals actively working to patch plugins, to develop new versions. But it's a moving sidewalk. If you're standing still, all of the latest protections are moving ahead of you, away from you. Mm-hmm. And so, what prevented hacking 18 months ago, it no longer does.
Yeah.
And unless, as to Amanda's point, unless you have somebody actively in there updating things on a regular basis, the site becomes outdated, and it's the outdated stuff that then becomes vulnerable. Mm-hmm. It protected you when it did, but that was version 4.3, and we're now at 5.4 or something.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
you got to get up on top of that. Now, there's a lot of complexity to this that we've touched in this conversation, as you know, it's been a privilege for me to kind of geek out a little bit with you. I've talked more than I normally would in these things just because I kind of love this stuff. I have a geek streak, I think. And for a small business owner who's listening to this, who's thinking to themselves, you know, we got some of this handled, but there was a few things there that I need to know. If you were to kind of wrap this up in a bow, what are the top line takeaways you want somebody who's heard us, you know, reminiscing and telling stories, what do they need to be thinking about now? As we kind of parting words here, what are some of the core issues they need to leave this conversation and go check to see if they've got this handled? And if they don't, they maybe need to reach out to you or someone like you to get it addressed. What are the big themes that they need to think about?
Well, I think obviously, you know, your homepage is the first thing that someone's going to see about your company. So you wouldn't go to a very important meeting with a spot on your tie or, you know, a spot on your shirt. So think of it that way. If you go to your site, you want to make sure that you're presented well. Also, the other takeaway, look at your biggest competitor. Who are some of the biggest companies that are out there in your space and see what they're doing? These companies have millions of dollars to spend on online marketing. So take some of the things that they're doing on their websites and incorporate it on your website. The other thing I would say is definitely look at what we call above the fold. What do you see once you get to the site?
Without having to scroll.
Thank you. Yeah. Is your message clear? Is there contact information above the fold, phone number, something like that? Because again, over 50% of all internet traffic right now is coming through mobile. So can I click on the phone number to, you know, give you a call if I'm a restaurant, if I'm a doctor's office, small business, that sort of thing. So those are the quick takeaways on the website side. And then the other side is, again, your omni-channel approach with your marketing. Identify who your customer is. You don't need to play on all the social media platforms. It's good for branding, but at the same time, if you're not a B2B company, then you don't have to be posting on LinkedIn unless you want to do some career stuff and you're looking to hire. But you do need to pick one or two of the platforms and focus on that. Put some money towards Google advertising, put some money towards that, you know, Facebook or Instagram advertising that's out there, and make sure that your brand's out there, but be strategic about it. One of the highest ROIs, which I still can't believe not everyone's doing, is email marketing. And it's not that, you know, and again, we all look at it and go, I don't want to be annoying because I get a ton of emails every day. I'm sorry, you're in business to generate revenue, put food on the table. At least get your brand and your logo in front of your customers and prospects on a monthly basis. Give them quality content. Don't just keep on asking to buy something, but at least get your brand in front of them because of the noise. They forget about you. People want to do business with you. They just forget about you. And so you need to make sure you've got a good email marketing campaign or active campaign out there.
You know, something I will just add on the tail end of that, because it's so right on the money and so few, you know, people, we all have opinions about stuff. Well, I don't like getting emails in my inbox. Fine. There are other people who also don't like getting emails in their inbox, but some people do. And in any case, it's still a huge channel for customer acquisition and sales.
Yeah.
Is to email. I was just doing a talk on LinkedIn last week, storytelling on LinkedIn, really on the awareness and branding side rather than on the sales side. And one of the people in the workshop asked a really great question, which is, I've tried to get my team to post more content, but some of what they're posting isn't very good. Should I stop them? And right there in the moment, I hadn't thought of this before, but I did then, and I'll share it now because I think it's worth knowing, is that the algorithms on social platforms actually work in the audience's favor. So if you post, you shouldn't worry about posting too much because it's not getting seen unless it's good.
Yeah.
And this is useful. In other words, relax a little bit. If you post something on LinkedIn, for example, mm-hmm. LinkedIn is only going to show it to a few of your followers. And the average CEO on LinkedIn has less than 1,000 connections. So that's not that many followers to begin with. Only some of them are going to see it. If nobody likes it, comments on it, shares it, they're going to not push it out further. So the good news is when you fail, nobody knows because it never really got seen. So don't worry about that.
Yeah.
Just create.
Mm-hmm.
Just create.
Yeah.
And the filtering will happen just as it does in our inboxes. Just put it out there people will do whatever they're going to do. Amanda, as we wrap up this conversation, what do you love most about your work? What lights you up and keeps you coming back after all these years?
It is. I really just love talking with our clients. Like, that to me is the best part. Seeing how they run their business, helping to understanding their challenges, helping them address those. That's what gets me excited at the end of the day, is getting to see the results of what we've done. And yeah, they love it. It looks awesome. And just the other day, we had a client tell us they were so happy they got one of their first customers through the campaigns we were doing. And that kind of thing is awesome to see us really growing their business and helping our clients be successful.
Yeah, I love that. Eric, what about you? What drives you? What's your passion here?
It's the same thing. It really, since day one, it's all been about helping small business owners. And you know, to Amanda's point, we always talk about it at the office. It's learning how we can help them grow their company, because we are, you know, their voice online. And we're putting food on, helping them put food on their table and their employees' tables. And that's pretty powerful stuff. It's a lot of fun. And you know, that's what we get to enjoy. And we hear the successes, you know, and some of the learning that each of our companies, you know, come across. And so that's really what keeps us going and keeps us doing what we do.
Well, I love that. And with 19 years experience, you're well positioned to keep abreast of trends. You really can be a valuable and trusted advisor for people. We'll post how they connect with you and share, you know, your website. And I know you have a lot of content, a lot of helpful information. If people are looking to try some of this themselves, they can certainly get some guidance with that. And of course, your team's available to discuss with them how you can step in and help with their business. Well, this has been a delightful conversation for me. Eric Olson, founder of Fast Turtle, Amanda Sett, creative director. Thank you so much for joining us in the studio today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For all of us here at Business Radio X, this is Dr. Adrian McIntyre. We'll see you next time on Valley Business Radio.